I call to order the interactive dialogue of the General Assembly on elements for a monitoring and accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda. I would like to warmly welcome all of you to this meeting. This interactive dialogue provides an opportunity for member states and other stakeholders to initiate discussions on possible approaches to monitoring, review, and accountability, and articulate ideas for a way forward with respect to developing a framework or frameworks for monitoring the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda. Permit me to make a statement. Excellencies, Secretary General, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I welcome you all to today's interactive dialogue. To begin, I would like to extend my appreciation to you, Secretary General, and your executive office for your support in making this dialogue possible. I am particularly pleased that with a little over half of the 68th session behind us, you, the member states, and the international community at large have become truly focused on the process of elaborating a new development agenda. It is also becoming increasingly clear that with this renewed focus, we now stand at the threshold of a fundamental reorientation of the global development efforts. And even at this early stage in the process, there seems to be widespread agreement that the intrinsic linkage between poverty reduction and sustainable development must guide the design of a post-2015 development agenda that is both unified and universal. Excellencies, today we will discuss a crucial component needed to make this happen, namely, how to ensure that our efforts and commitments will be closely followed by action and accountability. The move to a universal development agenda will require an accountability mechanism that is comprehensive and flexible, yet robust, holding different actors to account according to their different responsibilities. The time to begin this work is now. We cannot and should not wait until all the global goals and targets are agreed upon. Rather, a global monitoring and accountability framework will need to be an integral part of our ongoing discussions on the design of a post-2015 development agenda and its implementation. And your early contributions will also help in steering the work of our secretariat and other stakeholders. The framework we seek must be inclusive, transparent, and based on mutual respect. It must promote mutual learning. It will need to contain feedback and/or inputs from all levels, national, regional, and global. And it must fully realize the new potential of data and technology. Distinguished delegates, making true progress is always at risk without robust accountability. Governments everywhere need to be responsive to their parliaments, their constituencies, their voters, and to their country's civil society at large. At the national level, all stakeholders should play a role in ensuring effective oversight for aligning international commitments to national development objectives. However, these efforts must be anchored at the global level. Any possible post-2015 accountability architecture could consist of an overarching global framework with a number of specific regional or national level mechanisms reflecting differentiated capabilities. Such a shared global framework could be complemented by multiple frameworks to cater to the diversity of actors. in my humble view, a universal and inclusive framework for accountability for the post-2015 development agenda would need to address the following 3 points. One, it should take into account and build upon existing accountability frameworks, which can be used to inform the design of the new architecture. In other words, it is not necessary to build it from scratch. Accountability efforts in the post-2015 agenda should thus be mutually reinforcing with already existing accountability platforms at the global, regional, and national and local levels. Two, the framework needs to be about much more than simply monitoring compliance. It also needs to promote mutual learning and exchanges vital to genuine partnership and effective implementation. Three, the framework should also be intrinsically linked to the renewed Global Partnership for Development and ensure that related commitments, past, present, and future, are honored and promises are kept. This partnership must recognize the different capacities, strengths, and roles of the actors. We will review some of these conceptual points in depth at the first session this morning, and my team and I will be taking careful note of your views on these core concepts. Ladies and gentlemen, the new architecture the General Assembly built around a high-level political forum and the Economic and Social Council in Resolutions 67/290 and 68/1, respectively, is designed to promote an integrated approach to the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda. The ECOSOC Annual Ministerial Review has been a valuable global platform to review progress on the Millennium Development Goals. The High-Level Political Forum is expected to conduct regular reviews starting in 2016. The contributions of major groups and other relevant stakeholders are expected to bring significant added value to the work of the High-Level Political Forum. With this in mind, another important consideration involves the growing number and significance of multi-stakeholder partnerships, which will be tasked with implementing elements of the new agenda. As we heard clearly in the joint GA-ECOSOC Partnership Forum held just a few weeks ago, we must be fully aware of the different modalities of accountability which we engage with the private sector and civil society. While we must clearly embrace those in the private sector and civil society who want to be engaged in our joint post-2015 efforts, engaging these stakeholders in the implementation phase will give the United Nations unprecedented challenges in any accountability framework. Today, we hope to gain more understanding from all of you on how to recognize this increasing role of non-state actors in implementing the new agenda and how to create accountability mechanisms in these new partnership models. Another question we should aim to address today is, how can existing intergovernmental mechanisms, including those of the United Nations, be mobilized at various levels? One of the lessons learned from the past years of experience is that monitoring works best among peer countries at the regional level. Regional peer review mechanisms have emerged in various fields of sustainable development, trade, and development cooperation. In this afternoon session, we will hear some practical examples of these initiatives and what the benefits have been. Then we must apply the lessons from this experience to our design of a post-2015 development agenda and its means of implementation. We should make full use of the potential of these regional peer review mechanisms. Decentralized systems of accountability will ensure that all stakeholders take ownership and are incentivized to share evaluate and adjust their policies. Ultimately, we must make sure that our own national efforts to achieve the new sustainable development commitments are embedded in both regional and global frameworks. Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, today's dialogue is a unique occasion for member states to make a concrete contribution to setting out the accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda. I would imagine also that there will be a need for follow-up at subsequent levels, including at regional and national levels. We need to work together to construct a framework that will ultimately have a positive impact on development at the national level. In the end, this is where the results of our ambitions will need to be observed, measured, and evaluated. I look forward to our dialogue and to your insights and ideas. Thank you. I now give the floor to our Secretary General, His Excellency Ban Ki-moon. Secretary General.
Your Excellency, Mr. President of the General Assembly, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. I congratulate you, Mr. President, for organizing this dialogue on elements for an accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda. I commend this very timely and valuable initiative. The contours of the new post-2015 development agenda are coming into view. We have broad agreement that any development agenda must be a sustainable development agenda. We also agree on the need to ensure that poverty eradication, social justice, and environmental concerns are taken together in one framework. Member states are stepping up their efforts to come to a firm agreement on the sustainable development goals that will be at the core of the agenda. They are also making headway towards identifying supportive financing and means of implementation. It is not enough to determine what the goals are. We must also address how we will achieve them. In order to succeed, we need actions that can turn commitments into results. And we need to monitor, review, and evaluate those results and make them accessible to policymakers and the public. There are three important points to bear in mind going forward. First, accountability is essential to assess progress and achieve results. This should happen at the national, regional, and global levels. All actors, including governments, the UN system, civil society, and private sector, should be accountable for honoring their commitments. We need an inclusive, robust, yet flexible accountability framework. Second, over the past few years, we have heard the voices of our global conversation and more than 2 million people through the My World survey. It is worth noting that there are more than 1 million votes for an honest and responsive government. We must take the vision of the world's people into account. We must recognize the strength of each of our many partners. Third, to succeed, the accountability system must be universal. Any framework for accountability must apply to all, taking into account the different capacities and responsibilities. Accountability mechanisms and platforms should be nimble and decentralized. I understand that you will be reviewing a number of existing mechanisms this afternoon. Let us draw wisdom from lessons learned and discuss how we can create stronger incentives for accountability and results in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, for our part, we are making every possible effort to build an effective UN development system that is fit for purpose and ready for the post-2015 era. Accountability is about results. The MDGs have galvanized the UN to be more results-oriented and focused. At the operational level, UN country teams are more integrated than ever. They share common agendas and work programs. Internal discussions on reviewing the implementation of the MDGs are underway. The United Nations system is committed to addressing bottlenecks in achieving results on the ground. I believe firmly in leading by example. That is why I have included accountability and reporting mechanisms as an integral part of our multi-stakeholder initiatives. These include Sustainable Energy for All, Every Woman, Every Child, and Global Education First Initiative. This result-oriented approach shows our system's collective determination to end poverty and build a shared prosperity. And it demonstrates my resolve to deeply integrate the UN's analytical and operational work. This is key to making the UN environment a development system fit for purpose. Mr. President, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, we have many examples of regional peer review mechanisms that are central pillars of accountability frameworks at regional level. We should draw some experience from those mechanisms. Similar arrangements can be explored to possibly anchor a global platform. However, the United Nations alone cannot be the sole platform for a system of accountability. It must be integrated with regional and national level action by governments and their constituencies. I stand ready to support you as we travel the road ahead. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank our Secretary General for his statement. As members have been informed, this interactive dialogue consists of an opening segment, two panel discussions, and a closing segment, all to be held in this chamber. Participants are encouraged to use the opportunity during the panel discussions to pose questions and respond in an interactive manner to the comments and presentations made by the panelists and other experts. The first panel discussion, which will be moderated by Ms. Amina Mohammed, Assistant Secretary General and Special Advisor on Post-2015 Development Planning, is entitled Concepts for a New Accountability Framework or Framework or Frameworks for the Post-2015 Development Agenda and will take place immediately following the opening segment. The second panel, which will be moderated by Mr. John Hendra, Assistant Secretary General and Deputy Executive Director for Policy and Program in the United Nations Entity for Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women, or simply UN Women, is entitled Learning from Existing Review Mechanisms and will take place in the afternoon from 3 to 5:30 p.m. The closing segment will take place immediately thereafter. I would now like to invite the moderator and panelists of panel one discussion to take their seats at the podium. I mean, after the Secretary General and I leave, not at the same time. Just in case you're wondering. Opening segment is concluded. Thank you.
Okay. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, we shall continue with the interactive dialogue of the General Assembly on the elements of a monitoring and accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda. We will now begin the panel discussion one, entitled Concepts for a New Accountability Framework or Frameworks for the Post-2015 Development Agenda. I'd like to add my gratitude to the President of the General Assembly and Member States for being part of the dialogue today. It is certainly a key element to the Post-2015 Development Agenda as we begin to shape that process going forward. We face the challenge of setting up a universal and transformative sustainable development agenda, which should respond to a specific community, local, national, and regional realities. This is going to require a renewed accountability mechanism that is inclusive, has a broad-based ownership, is participatory from the bottom up, engaging peoples and citizens at the community, local, national, and global levels. We all appreciate that this will be a non-legally binding agreement. However, the power of it really will reside on its moral legitimacy, on the inclusion of all peoples, and on its capacity to mobilize and persuade. In this regard, it's crucial to have a framework for mutual, horizontal accountability among member states and all actors. It is clear that some of the multiple implications of a universal and transformative accountability framework will include multi-sector, multi-layered, multi-stakeholder, multi-generational, and we hope to hear from the different faces of this in the course of this interactive dialogue. In terms of our transparency information and the data revolution, accountability will need this good information. Transparency and accountability are powerful tools for ensuring citizens' involvement in policymaking, but it also empowers citizens, giving voice to the voiceless, and promotes social equality. We will need a data revolution to support the accountability framework, as was first alluded in the high-level panel of eminent persons of the Secretary General. With two important objectives to integrate statistics into public and private decision-making and to build trust between society and states through transparency and accountability. In introducing the focus of this session, we would like to review concepts and the general policies for developing a new accountability framework within the post-2015 development agenda. We had set out a few questions for the discussion to help the interactive dialogue along for the first part of this day and to essentially further set the scene that both the President of the General Assembly and the Secretary General started off with this morning. And just to go over these questions, the first of them, what incentives can be built into monitoring and review mechanisms that will make implementation reviews attractive for all stakeholders, that they will continue to engage from the beginning through the process of that development agenda? What should be the scope of reviews for the post-2015 development agenda, and at what level will they best be carried out? How can national reviews at regional level be optimized to link with the global deliberations? The third question would be, how could the UN system and other existing intergovernmental mechanisms be mobilized at various levels to engage with this? And the fourth, how much capacity building will be required for designing and implementing an effective monitoring and accountability framework, and what are the lessons that have been learned from monitoring the Millennium Development Goals? And lastly, how can accountability be ensured in the context of the growing role of multi-stakeholder partnerships? We are indeed privileged today to have a number of panelists and discussants that will help us in the first session. And I would like to start by introducing the speakers and asking for short and focused interventions, alluding to the questions that we hope will guide this discussion going forward. And it is my pleasure to begin with an introduction of His Excellency, the Permanent Representative of Mongolia to the United Nations, Mr. Odd Hoc, with a considerable amount of experience, but I think one of the most, I think, privileged reasons we are here today to listen to your intervention is the fact that you were able to bring to us an MDG 9, one that really concentrated on accountability and governance, making that agenda hang. So it is my pleasure to give you the floor for the first session.
Thank you, Ms. Amina Mohammed, for that kind introduction. Let me express my deep appreciation for organizing this very important dialogue, interactive dialogue, on a very crucial topic. We are in the process of unprecedented inclusive debates and discussions to formulate new global goals and developing a framework for global monitoring, reviews, and the accountability for obligations assumed is one of the key concepts and mechanisms, and a critically important element to ensure the goal that new development goals are achieved and targets are met. We expect that new goals will be a powerful tool because they are subject of very intensive debates. And a very inclusive process, and also that they go beyond statement of general objectives and will have explicit, concrete, time-bound, quantitative targets by which progress can be monitored. On the other hand, the new goal priority will have MDG legacy, and many of new goals is expected to be already part of national and local development strategies. And in this sense, the new goals is perceived to introduce new planning targets for already existing ideas and the challenge for national and local authorities to take ownership of this global one standard agenda into the national particularities. At the same time, we appreciate the complexity of the issue because there are different and numerous ways of to conceptualize accountability, and there are numerous principles formulated already, and particularly when we talk about social justice and sustainable development as a goals. Also, the complexity persists at the intergovernmental level, where it is somehow might be controversial debates on how the chains of accountability will work. And many definitions lead to complex and divergent understanding of accountability. And there is a risk that accountability might become a rhetorical discussion or very fashionable self-evident slogan in these debates. It is well emphasized that process for monitoring in order to set the accountability must be participatory, people-led, transparent, and inclusive. And first of all, it's very important to learn from the MDG experience because the MDG experience revealed how the crucial is the issue of monitoring and accountability, and which is also is identified as one of the weakest points in MDG's implementation, because MDG's interpret as normative goals was measured on somehow on the level achieved at a specific specified point of time. On the other hand, the capacity of countries and the different starting point of different countries raised formidable challenges in how to the unified goals can be implemented at the national levels. For Mongolia, we had somehow a very unique experience because Mongolia was one of few countries which adopted the Millennium Development Goal 9 on strengthening human rights and fostering democratic governance. And that's because the fundamental principle and the rationale behind it was the acceptance by Mongolia that that the true development and meeting the sustainable development must be cannot be genuine without the governance and respect for true respect for human rights. And the implementation of this MDG 9 was produced somehow the mixed results. From one point of view, firstly, it was again proved that it's extremely difficult to have sound indicators and monitoring targets, because particularly as we speak about the justice, human rights, and governance issue, it's very difficult to find a very adequate, optimal targeting criteria. And this immediately led to very challenging monitoring tasks for to assess. At the national level, of course, the Mongolia linked the implementation of MDGs with the national development strategy. So there was a formal decision to adopt it by the Parliament of Mongolia to adopt the national development strategy based on MDGs, and that and this the as to the term for the national strategy, it goes beyond 2015 up to the 2021. So in this sense, we have very long term a sustainable vision adopted back to 2008. Now we, of course, we engaged in formulation of new development goals, and we consider that, the necessary amendments and modifications will be brought to the our national development strategy. One experience, a very valuable experience for us in implementation of MDG 9 was the multi-stakeholders dialogue, which was a very encouraging experience for us, though it also revealed the challenge, which I think also is very representative in other countries. Because when you have multiple actors and when they have a different understanding of accountability and start talking about accountability obligations in different approach, let pose a real risk, because it risks of jeopardizing not only the accountability itself, but the very meaning of and importance of the global goals itself. That's why the initiating of stakeholders dialogue was initiated by with the bold leadership of president and the government and the prime minister, and there was very personal their involvement to initiate and invite the representatives and different stakeholders to discuss, to share their experience, and to hear what their vision in implementation of specific tasks related to implementation of MDGs. Also, that dialogue proved to be useful to ensure the quality of reporting, because conventionally it was perceived that it's a task of a government agency to come up with the reporting and assessment, Now, with, of course, there was close cooperation with UNDP and other UN agencies. The civil societies and NGOs were actively involved in a discussion, assessing the results of MDGs, and they were encouraged to produce alternative reports. As to the other stakeholders, of course, the parliamentarians play a crucial role because they represent the constituencies. They see the how is important, and even it's for them it's important to be seen as a very strong supporter of this dialogue, and it's somehow making kind of fashionable for them to put forward this idea. So let's this dialogue again was led by under the very bold leadership of the government and the presidential office. In 2 years ago, there was for the first time in the parliament, and the president initiated an open chamber for discussion, whereby the all important draft legislations shall be subject to popular discussion. So the representative of a very broad representative of the society, including the NGOs, professional associations, the human rights activists, and most importantly, in case of Mongolia, because concerns the economic development of Mongolia based on mining, the environmental NGOs played a crucial role in this discussion. What another point I want to stress is the in this dialogue, of course, the very important is transparency. Yes, accountability is supposed itself to be very transparent and inclusive process, but this transparency must be very meaningful. So in order to give the opportunity for different stakeholders to participate, to actually participate in the process, the transparency must be based on time the release of information. When the state committed, and also the media is also feel themselves responsible to deliver timely, transparent information on every aspect of implementation and realization of important projects. The internet access, of course, is playing the crucial role. Many comments, criticisms are being communicated through Twitter, and so the politicians for politicians it became very important to look at what because tweeting became the quickest means of communication, communicating the concerns of people, and in which is open, most importantly, very open, and cannot be a subject to restriction restriction by any means. It will be, of course, for review mechanism and the capacity issues that will be the subject of the second panel. So maybe I should stop here and listen because I feel very privileged to be among the very distinguished members of panel. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I thank Ambassador Ok for his important insights to the experience of Mongolia, the challenges and the lessons learned, especially as it alluded to the engagement of multi-stakeholders, for which we expect a much wider and broader set in the next development agenda, but also that they were able to use innovative approaches and the use of technology, the challenges and lessons learned from that. It is now my pleasure to give the floor to Mr. Scott Vaughan, the President and Chief Executive of the International Institute for Sustainable Development. You have the floor.
Ambassador Mohammed, Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you very much for convening this meeting and for inviting us. The International Institute for Sustainable Development very much welcomes the interest of member states through ECOSOC, through the HLPF, through DCF and other forums in discussing the principles that comprise a robust, credible, impartial, evidence-based, and transparent accountability framework for the post-2015 agenda. IISD regards accountability and monitoring mechanisms not as being extraneous instruments that is to be figured out after goals are established, but instead accountability and measurement are integral and substantive policy instruments that can help advance effective implementation, both at the national and at the international level. We know from reviews of both domestic and international policy, for example, from surveys taken through the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions, INTOSAI, that policy implementation remains a key challenge for both developed and developing countries. And one of the most common obstacles related to effective implementation is that of policy coherence. And therefore, a major challenge of any accountability framework is that it be coherent and coordinated. To provide one example based on what I thought was the very helpful note of Ambassador Ash, the WTO trade policy mechanism provides a useful example. It's comprised of three parts. The first is a review of member country programs, which is done in partnership with the member country and the WTO Secretariat based on a common and comparable methodology, including data related to that methodology, that in order to help measure not only the progress within the country, but to compare the progress across countries. And then a second step within that is a synthesis report in order to provide higher-level observations, both of where progress is being made as well as where there are common challenges. And the third element is then global reports or reports, both done by the WTO Secretariat as well as by UNDP and others, in order to provide then the global context for how countries are advancing or potentially stalling. So within that, I wanted to address three of the questions that were shared, and I'll do this very briefly, related to the discussions this morning. So the first is incentives, the second is capacity building, and the third is the role of stakeholders. So the first is related to incentives, and as a framing principle, an international accountability mechanism only can work if it is based on a means in order to provide assistance to help reinforce actions undertaken by national governments. And I'll give one example of a concrete example of how an incentive-based accountability system has worked in the environmental arena, and that is the Montreal Protocol related to protecting the stratospheric ozone level. It recognized its 25th anniversary several years ago, and it's been rightly termed the most successful international environmental treaty that has been negotiated. The Montreal Protocol, when it was first adopted, broke new ground in that it provided several key steps related to implementation. Mandatory data reporting, comparable data expectations among countries, new cooperation and collaboration mechanisms that were tried in order to support national implementation, the exchange of scientific information, and the establishment of a dedicated funding mechanism to support national implementation. In those rare cases in which noncompliance was determined based on monitoring, then those capacity building instruments including specifically additional financial support, both through a dedicated fund as well as through the Global Environment Facility, were put in place in order to help advance and accelerate national implementation. The overarching principle here in the Montreal Protocol is that non-compliance, or more broadly, non-attainment of a common goal, represented a shared challenge that would trigger different kinds of focused assistance in order to support country endeavors. This question of incentives is thus viewed to the second question I want to briefly address, and that is capacity building. And I wanted to mention a specific aspect that is related to data and indicators as the basis of monitoring. We know from experience that effective reviews are quantitative. Ministers like numbers, the media like numbers, the public sector likes numbers, and communities like numbers. This is one of the success stories of the MDGs. They've been able to build an effective review mechanism based on sound data, which in order to show progress as well as causality with policy interventions. We know that any monitoring systems needs to build a common reference point, that is, a clear set of where the measurement is starting based on a common baseline reference point. These reference points or common baselines need to be data intensive, and they need to bring data both from the micro level, from the specific community level, aggregated up to a national level. And many countries, including the country I come from, Canada, are continuously reviewing, amending, adjusting baselines because this is extremely difficult. And finding a set of baselines which are both data intensive as well as then brought up into a way that is understandable through a set of indicators we view as being a critical challenge in capacity building to put in place an effective policy accountability mechanism. We know that there is no scarcity of data. I think on the contrary, there are thousands and thousands of new pieces of data which are being generated daily through different and new delivery points, including remote sensing and other. The challenge is to organize this data in a way that is understandable from a policy direction through a set of indicators. And our experience at ISD is that getting the right set or the right number of indicators there's no magic formula to this, but commonly a set of 30 indicators in order to capture key trends such as poverty eradication, income inequality, access to clean water, access to public health, access to educational services, as well as different levels of environmental quality. That's the challenge that I think the accountability, universal mutual accountability mechanism will face. The third and final area I wanted to touch upon then, related to data and indicators, is the role of multi-stakeholder partnerships. We know that accountability principally rests with national governments. They are accountable to their national and subfederal congresses and parliaments. And we also know that the United Nations has made, I think, important strides in putting in place accountability mechanisms in order to ensure robust financial controls. But we know the challenges remain in measuring policy implementation. I think there's an opportunity here for governments in setting out the design of an accountability framework to look at the role of civil society organizations. They are often the generators of important data and indicator, as well as both at the community level as well as at the national level. And I think the challenge will be to how to weave those types of information in order to ensure that they are comparable, that they are robust, that they are based on evidence, that they are objective, and that they pass specific quality assurance standards in order to work. And just to give you a couple of examples, so one, because it's May 1st, the International Labour Organization works often in putting together national data sets and global data observations from input from trade unions as well as employers and others. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change similarly has woven both scientific observations from national governments as well as scientific observations from individual researchers and others. And similarly, WIPO in its Innovation Index is able to pull together observations and data from the private sector. So let me conclude by saying I think one of the challenges but one of the key opportunities in looking at this new avalanche of data is the ability of governments to absorb, respond, and structure different types of data. And one area of data that we're working on at ISD is this role of citizen science. We all know that in all our countries, that citizens are using handheld cell phones in order to take photographs or record areas where there have been violations in the environmental field and violations in other fields. And the challenge is how to organize this type of information in a way that actually is usable for, from a policy perspective. And one of the areas that we've been looking at in terms of an organizing framework is this challenge of natural capital or beyond GDP or green income accounting or well-being. It goes under many different names, and that, I hope, would be one of the areas that a accountability framework can address when looking forward. So with that, thank you very much.
I thank Mr. Vaughan for his interventions and bringing the importance of really sound research into the nexus between measurements and accountability. But I hear then underpinning the importance of the coherence of policymaking, an emphasis on the importance of the audience. I think that's going to be particularly important as we talk about a broader base of stakeholders. It is my pleasure now to give the floor to Ms. Claire Melamed, who is the Director for the Growth, Poverty and Inequality Group of the Overseas Development Institute in the United Kingdom.
Thank you. Amina, thank you, distinguished delegates, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for inviting the Overseas Development Institute to participate in this important dialogue. I'm looking forward to a very interesting and informative discussion this morning. Particularly pleased to be having this conversation at this point. I think while we're all involved in the day-to-day effort of designing the goals and making sure that we have a set of goals that is robust, that is fit for purpose and covers the major issues of facing the planet and the people who live on it, it's very important also to keep in mind that these goals themselves are just the start. The point is not to create the perfect set of goals. The point is to create a set of goals which create the right incentives and lead to action that it makes people's lives better. And clearly, in order to know whether or not we're doing that and to know whether the goals are having the effect for which we are all devoting so much time and energy, the accountability framework is absolutely key. That is the point when we start to know whether the goals are actually leading to the change that is the point of it all. For us, I think the two most important questions to consider when designing the new framework for monitoring and for accountability of the post-2015 agenda will be accountability to who and accountability for what. So who are governments accountable to? First and foremost, of course, they're accountable to their own citizens. The new goals, one way of looking at the new goals and at the results of the negotiations that are going on in this building to design them, is that the goals are a promise made by governments to improve the lives of the world's population now and into the future in specific and measurable ways. And the population will quite rightly want to know regularly if these promises are being kept. So this is an accountability to people, and it's accountability for improving lives, for keeping the promises that are made. I think it's important while we're thinking about structures and frameworks and meetings and reports to remember that this accountability between governments and people is not one that can be discharged in meeting rooms in this building. A complex arrangement that might be created or built out of existing structures of meetings and reports at different levels might provide the architecture for accountability, but I suspect that nobody will be walking through the door. It's quite easy to forget here when acronyms like ECOSOC and HLPF and UNGA are a part of the everyday conversation and the stuff of people's everyday lives, that for the majority of the people in the world, these terms, I'm afraid to say, are slightly meaningless. Their starting point is much simpler, is to ask if their government is making their lives better and is delivering the services and guaranteeing the rights and the freedoms that they are entitled to. So I think in thinking about accountability, we need to also keep in mind what are the structures and the frameworks that we can put in place to help people know if their own governments are keeping the promises that they will make in 2015. The essential raw material for this accountability between governments and people is information. We've already heard, I think this will be a theme running through the morning, I suspect, the essential need for information that is accurate, that is relevant, and that is presented in a way that people can understand. People want to know if governments are meeting their promises to improve education, to make healthcare accessible to all, or to reduce the carbon emissions from industry and agriculture. And they need some basis on which to make the judgment about how their governments are performing, and for that they need information. At the moment, in too many countries, that raw material is lacking. We will not know, for example, for sure, if the current MDGs have been achieved until possibly sometime around 2017 at the earliest. This is not good enough for the citizens who will be voting, who will be lobbying and campaigning in 2015, and who need to know then whether governments have kept their promises. So the first part of an accountability framework has to be information. And this information becomes effectively part of what are existing accountability frameworks at the national level, in other words, politics. If information is the raw material for accountability, then data is the raw material for information. And we've already heard about a data revolution. This is an idea. Clearly, whose time has come. It sparked an enormous amount of interest from right across society, from NGOs to the private sector to think tanks, governments. Clearly, there is a need out there for improved data to process into the kind of information that people can use. What the post-2015 agenda and the discussion about accountability offers us is an opportunity to think hard, think systematically, put the organisation and the resources in place for regular rounds of information collection in countries, which will come from surveys, from crowdsourcing and innovations, things that we don't even know yet, new innovations in data collection driven by the private sector and NGOs, which are happening in lots of small ways in lots of countries, in which this provides an opportunity to share information and expand their reach. And crucially, from opinion polls, like, for example, the My World survey, which need to be part of a new monitoring framework. I think we have got past the point where it is acceptable to tell people that their lives are improving in different ways. I think we also need to be asking whether they themselves are seeing and feeling those improvements and what they would like to see in terms of the policies to improve their own lives. These collection, regular, systematic collection of all of these different kinds of information can be part of holding governments to account and also building citizen awareness of and enthusiasm for the new goals. I think as we're thinking about designing the goals, we also need to start planning for the collection of information, and in particular, start now so that we're ready with something, with a big campaign to collect the data for the baseline in 2015, in 2016, when the new goals are agreed. We can push the button then on a big global campaign for a baseline and really generate not just the information, but the excitement and the political awareness will be part of the accountability framework. Governments, of course, are also accountable to each other for these goals. There is, as we've already heard, a very important role for horizontal accountability between governments. They're a collective promise, and the world cannot meet all of the goals unless all governments play their part. So each governments need to hold each other to account for those promises so that they fail or succeed together. And this, of course, is where some of the existing institutional arrangements that we see within this building and within the infrastructure of the United Nations will come in. There are two things that we might want these arrangements to do. First of all, they would provide a place where governments can establish on the basis of agreed metrics, and again, we've heard about the crucial importance of having those agreed metrics and the certainty that they provide, whether they are meeting the commitments made to each other and to the world as a whole. And secondly, of course, these structures provide a place where governments can look not just at the outcomes, but also at means, at policies, can see what policies and programs different governments have put in place to achieve the outcomes agreed in the new goals, and to learn from and encourage each other to innovate, to adapt, and to be sure that all governments are playing their part and making the changes that the new goals will require. I'd suggest that the guiding principles for this intergovernmental accountability should firstly be efficiency, having the smallest number of meetings and the smallest institutions to achieve the effect that is required. Secondly, flexibility, having a structure that could change over time. We don't know what the requirements for accountability are going to be in 10, 20 years' time, and also vary from region to region. And I think, importantly, might look different for different goals. So that, for example, while a regional approach to shared accountability and learning might be most appropriate for goals in the area, for example, of health or education, a more global approach might be required for issues like financing and trade, where it's commitments across all countries that are really crucial to achieving that accountability. And very importantly, though, a third principle would be accessibility, having a structure that people can understand, that is transparent, and that's open to inputs by civil society, by academics, by parliamentarians and others. Just to summarize, to finish, the new goals will be a promise by governments to people and to each other. Monitoring this promise needs, first and foremost, good information on both policies and on outcomes to know what actions are being taken and to what end. But no structure can compensate for poor information, and that should be the priority. But of course, having information without appropriate structure also would lead to a failure of accountability. We need to create the spaces and structures for people to use that information, to communicate it, and to ensure that those people who have the power and the resources to make decisions hear and understand what people are saying to them. I very much look forward to hearing the other speakers, and I hope that these ideas have been useful as you continue with your very important job of designing the future development framework after 2015. Thank you.
Reminding us of the importance of a new development agenda that really serves people and planet, and that we really design an accountability framework that responds to ensuring that promises made are really promises that will be delivered. And I think that we really have a big chance of making this happen as member states actually take leadership and ownership of this at this level. It's now my pleasure to give the floor to Mr. Ignacio Saez, the Executive Director of the Center of Economic and Social Rights.
Many thanks, Madam Chair and Mr. President, for this opportunity to be part of this discussion on accountability in the post-2015 agenda. This issue has been a central concern to my organization and to many others in the human rights community, including the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, who will be with us this afternoon, and with whose office we published a study on this topic last year. As recognized by the Secretary General during the 2010 MDG review, the absence of accountability has been perhaps the most pervasive and damaging of all the shortfalls of the current MDG process. So given the opportunity that the post-2015 process represents, our joint project with the Office of the High Commissioner sought to analyze these accountability gaps from a human rights perspective and to explore how the instruments and mechanisms of human rights could help to address them this time round, to clarify questions of the who, how, and what of accountability. So I want to briefly share some of the insights from this work, which are of relevance, I think, to this discussion on concepts. In terms of definitions of accountability, we drew on the literature on accountability in public administration to define accountability in this development context as the obligation of policy decision makers and other development actors to take responsibility for their actions, to answer for them to those affected by their decisions, and to be subject to enforceable sanction if their conduct or explanation for it was found wanting. And we looked at these three constituent elements, responsibility, answerability, and enforceability, from a human rights perspective. With apologies to the interpreters, because these Anglo-Saxon terms are very difficult to render in French and Spanish, and I'm sure Arabic too. As a normative framework defining the accountability relationship between governments as duty bearers and people as rights holders, human rights have much to contribute to our understanding of these three elements. Firstly, human rights can help to define the respective responsibilities of governments and other actors in the development process, because human rights standards set out in considerable detail the specific obligations that should inform the conduct of governmental institutions who are mandated to realize everyone's right to health, education, housing, and other economic and social rights essential to a life with dignity. But these standards also shed light on the responsibilities on responsibilities above and beyond the state. And the emphasis in the MDGs on the shared responsibility of states, international institutions, the private sector, and civil society has tended to obscure the task of identifying more precisely the differentiated responsibilities of these different actors on the development stage. One of the most persistent accountability deficits that was highlighted in the study has been the difficulty of holding wealthier countries to account for their responsibilities under the Global Partnership for Development envisaged in MDG 8. And we found that framing these transnational responsibilities in human rights terms in the SDG framework could underscore the responsibility of all states to ensure that their policies and practices in such areas as trade, investment, and tax policy at least do not undermine human rights beyond their borders. And given the prominent role that's currently being envisaged or given to the private sector in discussions around partnerships and means of implementation, its responsibility to respect and to do no harm to human rights and the environment must also be more clearly inscribed in the new framework. The UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights offer an important but as yet under-recognized normative and operational basis for this. So in terms of the second dimension of accountability, answerability, human rights set out a range of civil and political freedoms that must be safeguarded if conditions for answerability are to exist and to flourish. If ordinary people, particularly those living in poverty, are to hold those in power answerable to their post-2015 commitments, they must be able to exercise basic freedoms of assembly, association, and expression, as well as the right to access the relevant information all relevant information on how policy decisions are made and how resources are allocated. Our study found little evidence that the MDGs had fostered answerability in this way. Indeed, over the MDG period, human rights advocates in many parts of the world have reported increased restrictions on these rights, with those working on development and environmental issues often at particular risk of repression. Answerability has more often, the MDGs, the current framework, has more often been invoked to hold developing countries answerable to donors rather than all governments to their citizens. So this speaks to the importance of including commitments to responsive governance in the substantive content of the post-2015 framework, as indeed many open working group members and governments such as Mongolia, as well as civil society groups, are proposing. And civil society groups have been proposing specific and measurable targets in that regard. But this question also demands that the post-2015 infrastructure for implementation enables meaningful citizen participation in monitoring and interrogating development-related policies. Now, there has been much interest in the use of innovative social accountability tools and data technologies in this regard, and this is very important. But we feel that the transformative potential of the data revolution will depend on the extent to which it really enables individuals and communities who are facing deprivation to mobilize in defense of their rights and to demand answers from decision makers. The SDG framework must go beyond a focus on these technological tools as an end in themselves and see them as a means to counter the current threats that we're seeing to civil society organizing and to trade union organizing, as was mentioned earlier. And this brings me to the third and last dimension, enforceability. The human rights framework not only includes a collection of normative standards, but also an array of institutions at the national, regional, and international levels through which accountability to these standards can be enforced. While, of course, the post-2015 architecture must include new and effective mechanisms specifically created to monitor and review progress towards any agreed goals, accountability to these commitments can also be enhanced by ensuring that existing mechanisms, including administrative mechanisms, legislative mechanisms, judicial and human rights bodies, are more effectively engaged in reviewing efforts to meet the new Sustainable Development Goals. As accountability is primarily enforced at the national level, our study focused and surveyed the actual and potential role of parliamentary bodies, constitutional courts, national human rights commissions, administrative grievance procedures, amongst others, in playing a range of accountability functions, including monitoring development outcomes, reviewing policy efforts, scrutinizing resources, and providing accessible means of redress to those whose rights are infringed in the development context. This element of redress and remedy is often absent in discussions of accountability. We also highlighted in the study good practice in the work of regional peer review mechanisms and in the work of some international human rights oversight bodies. With regard to MDG-specific mechanisms, there is good practice currently, and we would highlight, for example, the Commission on Information and Accountability on Women and Children's Health, which is a kind of a current accountability monitoring body for MDGs 4 and 5, whose very rights-centered and multi-layered approach to accountability could be a model to draw on in the post-2015 framework. Where we found existing human rights and MDG accountability mechanisms weakest is in enforcing the commitments around international cooperation, as has been mentioned. And by this, I mean not just monitoring ODA commitments, but also looking at the cross-border impacts of states' trade, debt, tax policies. Human rights provide a useful normative yardstick for policy coherence, but as yet, the infrastructure for enforcing policy coherence is sorely lacking. So to finish, what is clear is that the accountability framework this time around should not be seen as monolithic, but more as a web or as an ecosystem addressing very different spheres, global, regional, national, and local, different actors, states, international institutions, and the private sector, and different functions, the monitoring function, reviewing and providing remedies, as well as potentially focusing on different sectoral goals, as Claire was mentioning. There may be differential needs for accountability mechanisms on health or water and sanitation. To conclude, the success and the legitimacy of the SDGs will hinge on their effectiveness in spurring all development actors to answer to their differentiated responsibilities. The human rights community stands ready to play an active role in reinforcing this, in building and reinforcing this accountability infrastructure, and we have high expectations that the proposals being made for anchoring accountability in human rights principles will be taken on board. We think this can help bring about an accountability system which is universal, not partial, balanced rather than skewed, and a robust system for enforcing commitments as opposed to a weak and voluntary monitoring mechanism which we have now. Framing the new development commitments as a matter of human rights obligation and bringing the mechanisms of human rights enforcement to bear in assessing compliance are surely amongst the most powerful ways we can incentivize achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sayes, and for bringing in the rights perspective to this and really underscoring roles and responsibilities in what should be a truly global partnership as well as partnerships and making the differentiation there. All governments responsive to citizens. I would add people, because today we know that the big, huge challenge of migration and those without legal status. It is my pleasure to invite Mr. Anders Johansson, the Secretary General of the Interparliamentary Union, to make his remarks.
Thank you very much, Amina. And like my co-panelist, I'm very pleased to be part of this panel and do my best to try to answer a couple of the questions that you have posed to us. And won't come as a surprise to anybody that I will be focusing on parliaments, and I will take the cue from a recommendation of the UN Secretary General himself in a recent report in which he talks about the interaction between the UN parliaments and the Interparliamentary Union. And in the report, he says that parliaments are essential to ensure the implementation of major international agreements, and the UN and the IPU should therefore work closely to incorporate a clear role for parliaments at the global level and jointly support country-led efforts that need to accompany the post-2015 Sustainable Development Goals. Now, before I started to dwell into the details of what this might entail, I thought I would say a few words of the concept of accountability, but I will refrain from doing so because Ignacio just did it for me. So I will just end up by saying that the point that I wanted to make in that first part of my introduction was to say that when it comes to accountability, it is, in our view, the enforceability that is the key. Unless you can force those responsible for a commitment to finally deliver or to correct the course they are on, then the whole accountability effort comes to naught. In other words, the true test of accountability is in the results. If there is no behavioral change and no detectable improvement on the ground, then accountability has failed. So what makes enforceability possible and at what level does it apply? Well, as we know, development commitments are not legally binding at the global level. It is only at the national level that we can talk about enforceability. It is only at that level because this is where commitments must find their way into national development plans and ultimately into law, including through the bill of the budget. Accountability, therefore, is the strongest from the national level and up. And it is, of course, at this level that we find the institutional parliament as the one body endowed by the Constitution to play this role. Whichever system of governance a state has adopted, it contains all over the world a parliament that is tasked with two fundamental responsibilities, to legislate and to hold government to account. An accountability framework should clearly incorporate and build on this fundamental facet of the state governance structure. It is the function of parliaments everywhere to hold government to account for the implementation of commitments both to the people and to the international community. Each parliament will devise its own system for fulfilling its responsibilities. They will differ from one country to another, but there will also be many common traits. Parliaments hold governments to account by asking questions which ministers are legally obliged to answer. They conduct special inquiries and investigations. Parliamentary committees undertake studies, publish reports, make recommendations on specific areas of policy. Parliamentary reports place an issue in the public domain. Accountability through Parliament leads to greater public awareness and enhanced scrutiny of government actions. A good case in point in this country is the recent publication of the Senate Intelligence Committee's report into the interrogation practices of the CIA. Parliaments hold public debates and invite civil society, private enterprise, and others to contribute their views. They scrutinize the budget and examine public accounts. A fully representative parliament with parity between men and women can speak with unequaled legitimacy on behalf of society as a whole. Moreover, they are constantly exposed to the views of the citizens they encounter and are better placed than most to understand how well public programs reach and benefit citizens. In short, parliaments have all the tools of the trade at their disposal to monitor implementation, and I will speak slower. Thank you. The post-2015 Sustainable Development Agenda, and indeed a future global climate change agreement as well, should make the best use possible of this existing accountability mechanism. Accountability is not about creating difficulties for governments. It is about facilitating its work and promoting efficiency in the delivery and allocation of resources. There are many examples where parliaments have played this role in relation to the MDGs. A singularly powerful example of horizontal accountability was provided by the Parliament of Uganda in 2012, when it influenced the passage of the state budget in a manner so that funding for healthcare was substantially increased. However, many parliaments have used, maybe less spectacularly, their committee procedures to monitor health coverage and influence progress in achieving MDGs 4 and 5. And what is true for parliaments is also true for our institution. As an example, the IPU is a strong supporter of the Every Woman, Every Child strategy. We focus on the countries with the highest maternal and child mortality burden, and we help build capacities in the parliaments of these countries to hold governments to account for commitments they have made. the outcome of this work are reported annually through the independent expert review group. One of the many lessons we are learning from the MDGs is that accountability becomes stronger when it incorporates international human rights standards. These standards have been agreed to by states and are directly relevant to achieving sustainable development. For example, those relating to equality and non-discrimination, to mention but two central examples, are absolutely essential to be able to ensure access to treatment for HIV and AIDS, and hence for attaining MDG 6. Moreover, including these standards facilitates accountability because it then becomes a matter of enforcing legal and not just discretionary rights. Moreover, as been pointed out, fundamental freedoms of expression, information, assembly, and association are essential to accountability. Without them, people cannot participate in a meaningful manner in decision-making processes and report on and challenge actions taken by public officials. Respect for these basic rights is central to achieving accountability in any country. Another lesson we have learned is that to strengthen accountability, we need to strengthen the parliaments, both in their domestic functions and in terms of their linkages to the global level. This in turn raises the question of reinforcing the role of parliaments across the board, which means more capacities, better institutional processes, and clearer mandates for parliaments to carry out their oversight function. It is enough to consider the latest DCF survey on mutual accountability to get an idea of the kind of support that parliaments will need if they are to play a stronger accountability role. Looking at the role of parliaments in development cooperation processes at the country level, the DCF survey showed that parliaments continue to play a limited role in mutual accountability at the country level, that they are seldom consulted on aid policies, that they do not participate regularly in national aid dialogues, and that they do not receive much funding from donors for capacity building. Here at the UN, there has been an opening for parliaments to be more involved, not just in terms of providing input to policy debates, but also in helping evaluate implementation of global commitments. A number of soft mechanisms have been put in place, too many to describe, but they will need much more work to mature into a functioning architecture. The DCF, the Development Cooperation Forum of ECOSOC, has provided an important opening not only for parliaments and MPs, but also for other stakeholders to come together at regular intervals to contribute to new thinking, but also take stock of the state of affairs in development cooperation, particularly through global surveys precisely on mutual accountability. Among other things, the DCF is helping define the responsibilities of the various stakeholders in the area of development cooperation. The problem, to the extent there is one, is that the DCF's progress reports are on a global scale only and do not focus on individual country performance. A much harder accountability structure is given by the national reporting and review mechanisms of the UN, particularly those relating to the human rights machinery. With the support from our organization, parliaments have been linked to the national reporting exercise on the implementation of the CEDAW Convention. The IPU makes sure that parliaments are aware when their reports are tabled at the CEDAW. We make sure that parliaments have an opportunity, certainly encourage them to be part of the delegation that joins the committee session. And we make sure that parliaments have transmitted to them a copy of the report of the CEDAW. The beauty of that system is that the parliament then has an opportunity also to be looking at the recommendations that comes out of the committee. And we have noted excellent results in the sense that there is more implementation of recommendations coming out of that exercise. This well-tested practice is now being used in relation to the Universal Periodic Review of the Human Rights Council. As recommended by a specialist panel, accountability for human rights commitment can be strengthened by involving in a similar manner the parliaments. I have plenty of things that I want to say. You can see, having worked with this organization for and over two decades, I can go on forever, which I will not do. Have no fear. I would like to make just one simple point. There are, in this work by parliaments, if it is well nurtured, make sure that you bring it in at the global monitoring exercises that you have. And you can look to our organization to assist you in that exercise. Before I conclude, let me just say one thing about the agenda itself. If we want to make sure that there will be accountability for the implementation of the future SDGs, we also must look at the SDGs themselves. What I mean by this is that they should include a specific goal on governance, or in our view, democratic governance, as well as a specific target under such a goal on strengthening parliaments. If it becomes a global commitment that the key accountability institution that every country has ought to be strengthened and supported, then it follows that the pursuit of this one target will also help with the implementation of the SDG framework. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ellison. Clearly, new players in the development agenda, but players that are important to not just making the laws that we see in particular deliver appropriations and resources to development, but also have an oversight function in the scheme of things. I'd like to thank the panelists for giving the substance that they have to the scene that was set by the President of the General Assembly earlier today and the Secretary General. And we would now like to hear presentations by our discussants. So we have three distinguished discussants who will speak, I hope, to 5 minutes before we then open the floor for comments and observations and questions. I would now like to give the floor to Mr. Roberto Bisio, the coordinator of the Social Watch Network and executive director of the Third World Institute. I'd like for the... Oh, you're there. I was going to say, come up to the podium. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to address this meeting. And I understand that it was not as a discussion, but as a panelist that I received an invitation to participate. But anyhow, I will try to be to the point. But the point is, some of the ideas that we are discussing here are actually very, very old. 4,000 years ago already, King Hammurabi had the laws of his domain between the Tigris and the Euphrates River carved in stone, placed in front of his palace. The laws were written in the plain language of the people, not in the language of the priest, so that everybody could understand them. They were not engraved on clay, so they could not be changed overnight at will, and they were not hidden. They were so that everybody could access them and learn, for example, that even judges had a duty not to betray the rules in the decisions. Now, these are basic principles of accountability that have been set 4,000 years ago already. Much more recently, only 200 and something years ago, in 1789, La Déclaration des Droits de l'Homme et du Citoyen stated that every citizen has the right to check the needs to pay taxes, and that society has the right to hold every public agent accountable. 200 and something years of that declaration. And it's the idea that people that are at the base of a society should be protected by justice and exercise accountability is not the property of any particular region. In the 14th century, Arab philosopher Ibn Khaldun, the father of modern sociology, wrote in the Macadimera, quoting Aristotle, the 8 principles of political wisdom, which were, 1, the world is a garden, the fence of which is the dynasty, meaning the state. The state has the authority that defines proper behavior. That was 2. 3, proper behavior becomes policy when directed by the ruler. 4, the ruler is an institution supported by the soldiers. 5, the soldiers are helpers who are maintained by money. 6, money sustainers brought together by the subjects. 7, the subjects are servants who are protected by justice. 8, justice is the harmony that makes the world a garden. And there you complete the cycle, and you can start in any of them because it goes around and around. Now, if we translate the garden as sustainable development, we have all we need in the current discussions for a renewed agenda. Policy and regulations, means of implementation, taxes, compliance mechanisms, justice, which is what we really talk about when we talk about monitoring and accountability. Now, the promises have been made, some of them as far back as 1948 in this house with the Declaration of Human Rights and then the different commitments by different conferences all the way up to the Millennium Declaration. But non-compliance with these promises, morally condemned in all cultures and places, is not published, it's not punished, and not even properly monitored. The commitments made to society tend to be easily forgotten unless society organizes itself to monitor them. That is what Social Watch does. Precisely, we have been doing that since 1995 to monitor the commitments at that moment to eradicate poverty and to achieve gender equity, the Social Summit and the Beijing Conference on Women. And that monitoring happens mainly at national level, as has been rightly stated. But when doing that monitoring, we have found out something that probably Hammurabi already knew. Accountability is only meaningful if the powerful can be brought into account. The powerful can be the landowner or the major or the chief of police for a rural community, but in the world as a whole, the powerful are the big countries, the intergovernmental institutions, particularly those dealing with trade and finances, transnational corporations, and even some huge foundations and international NGOs with budgets of billions of dollars. We firmly believe that it's up to citizens to hold their governments accountable through parliaments, for example. And in exercising those rights, our member coalitions have identified pork barrels of millions of dollars in national budgets and redirected them toward genuine social development. They have even avoided civil wars by developing credible election monitoring mechanisms in African countries based on social networks. But very often, our national coalitions found in practice that the smaller, the poorer, or the more vulnerable a country is, the more it is being held accountable to foreign actors. All countries are subject to the Universal Periodic Review of Human Rights, and this is a very good thing and a progress, but countries are also monitored by the WTO accession commitments, supervised by the IMF, even if they are not debtors. They report to each of their bilateral donors individually and collectively. When a recipient country sits with 12 or 20 bilateral donors, the IMF and the World Bank at home, this is called mutual accountability. Now, is that a situation where the recipient country can make all these institutions accountable to their unmet ODA commitments or to their unmet promises of raising the voice of African countries in the IMF? No. It is in a house like this where that accountability can and should happen. Our members also have frequently observed that the accountability to the citizens is frequently postponed and undermined by this accountability to the powerful. And the role of parliaments is undermined when a budget is negotiated in that way with the donors and then brought to parliament to rubber stamp because you cannot negotiate it and then go back and so on. And that erodes the basic democratic principles and institutions. Further, over 2,000 bilateral investment agreements signed over the last 20 years have created rights for corporations that individuals don't have, like the right to settle anywhere they want, to bring with them any personnel they decide they need, to repatriate profit without restrictions, and even to litigate against governments in demand of lost profits because, for example, of environmental or health policies. And that litigation doesn't happen in the national courts, but in the International Center for the Settlement of Investment Disputes, ICSID, hosted by the World Bank, which is a non-transparent tribunal that not only displaces national jurisdiction, but creates international law without any legitimacy by deciding that investor standards set by themselves have a higher status than any environmental, health, or human rights agreement. No single duty was created for corporations to compensate for this expansion of their rights. And maybe that is the explanation of what now we find so surprising, which is the increased and disproportionate share of capital captured by the corporations and the symmetric reduction in the share of labor in the benefits of growth that has been so overwhelmingly demonstrated by Thomas Piketty in his book of Capital in the 21st Century. Corporations have to be made accountable, not only to the owners and consumers, but to the workers, to the people affected by their operations. And this requires rules set by governments, reporting, due diligence, etc., some of which has been mentioned. The Writing Finance Coalition, of which South Sawatch is a member, has made the criteria explicit, and the document is available. I will not read all of them, but I would certainly suggest that parliaments, for example, illustrate us on the rules for lobbyists that are applied around the world and that are not applied in the international arena and should be applied. Corporations in partnership with the UN should be subject at least to the reporting requirement that us NGOs have. When we come to government through the UN Committee of ECOSOC, NGO committee, and they have to report on finance, the origins, adherence to human rights and UN principles, description of the initiatives undertaken to support the NDGs, and demonstrated contribution to the work of the UN, all of which is supervised by governments. Why that doesn't exist for some of the main actors? The mandates exist. They have been mentioned, including the guiding principles on extreme poverty and human rights and on human rights and business, but they need to be implemented. And the high-level political forum is probably the forum for that. But in order to play a role, it needs to be assisted by a strong secretariat. It needs to be informed by adequate reporting. It needs to be carefully prepared, perhaps by an active chair and a troika of the past and future chairs, so that there is a kind of continuity that 1 week of meetings could not substitute. Accountability doesn't happen without transparency. We need the information, and it needs an enabling environment for NGOs. And as much as we use social networks and the power of miniaturization of devices, we need to warn against the power of big data that only huge corporations and some very few very big governments can harness to the detriment of privacy and to the detriment, in many cases, of human rights. And we need to warn against web-based polls. If you go to the website of the American Pollsters Association, they will tell you that this is not a valid opinion poll mechanism when people self-select to click or give their opinions, but just a publicity gimmick. And I think it is really improper for this kind of exercises to be quoted as a valid evidence, and even worse, to be made a substitute for the organized and informed participation of civil society in the monitoring and accountability mechanisms for whatever decisions are going to be taken. Thank you very much, and happy Workers' Day to you all.
Thank you, Mr. Vissio, and happy Workers' Day to you too. Important insights and experiences of the network and institute, especially reinforcing the need that when we come up with our partnership or partnerships, that the need for accountability that remain will keep people at the center of the development agenda. I now have the pleasure of giving the floor to Mr. Mark Levi, Deputy Director of the Center for International Earth Science Information Network at the Earth Institute of Columbia University.
Thank you, Madam Ambassador. What I'd like to do is reflect today on lessons and insights from the field of sustainability science, for accountability mechanisms suitable for the post-2015 development agenda. I'll spell out the characteristics of the management challenge from the perspective of this research and derive elements for an accountability framework that is suitable. I'm drawing on my experience in research on global environmental governance, sustainability indicators, participation in various assessment processes, and partnerships with various countries trying to make the visions of sustainability real. My starting point is that we need to think systemically. A fundamental insight from sustainability science is that human well-being depends heavily on the functioning of linked, dynamic systems spanning physical, biological, and socioeconomic domains. And this insight manifests in several ways. For one thing, understanding feedbacks that link system behaviors is of crucial importance. What may appear to be a viable trajectory when examined from a narrow perspective could be very risky when other systemic linkages are taken into account. The precise way in which systems interact varies considerably across space, and therefore understanding and managing the interactions requires a high degree of customization to particular places and situations. And finally, what we have come to discover is that systemic transitions can be periods of great danger. Demographic transitions, political transitions, land use transitions, climatic transitions, these are all periods in which social vulnerability peaks. So we have to monitor them and prepare for them. So what are the implications for our accountability framework? What accountability framework do we need? We're beginning more and more to take stock of these systemic threats by way of formulating goals that have systemic behavior as their target rather than simple endpoints. Our biggest disasters come when we manage systemic transitions badly and when we fail to understand the implications of systemic behavior. And our biggest successes come when we break free from the old modes and think systemically. Some of the biggest successes with the MDGs have come when this has been brought about. So this systems-oriented nature gives rise to the following five requirements. First, our accountability mechanisms must be sensitive to the complex linkages that are necessary to understand and manage. These are linkages across multiple processes, across long distances, and across multiple stakeholders. This is messy, and it's difficult, and there's no alternative. Second, they must be built on information systems that are fit for purpose. Although it's been fashionable to put great faith in big data and to hope that the information we need will be easy to get and low cost, in fact, this is a misunderstanding. It is irresponsible to think that we can get the information we need on the cheap. We will have to invest in it. And I would just like to underscore the remarks that Claire Melamed made in this regard. I agree 100%. And in light of the failure of our existing institutions to provide this information, it's clear that we will have to invent new ways to do this. So I will echo Mr. Vaughan's remarks on these lines. Public-private partnerships, citizen science, a variety of new mechanisms will be needed. Third, the accountability mechanisms must be organized around a spirit of learning, discovery, and mutual engagement. Here I'm echoing the remarks of President Ash earlier this morning. Accountability in the context of navigating through complex systems toward a sustainable future is not like filling in rows and columns in a ledger. It's a process that goes by many different names, adaptive management, polyarchy, social learning, and so on. Effective managers just call this good management. We need to design accountability processes that reflect this way of organizing. Fourth, the accountability mechanisms must be organized around the time frames that are appropriate to the change processes they're meant to engender. Many of the new topics under discussion are envisioning transforming processes along multi-generational time frames. The Millennium Development Goals broke new ground by focusing attention on a 15-year time frame. And that was revolutionary, and it gave rise to many new innovations. But what we're talking about today, in many respects, has an even longer time frame to it. One implication for me is that we should have at least one concrete goal that has at least a 30-year time frame to it. Simply repeating the 15-year horizon would not make sense. And the coincidence of 2045 as the 100-year anniversary of the Charter might help spark even deeper introspection. So the concrete implication for our accountability mechanisms is that we need to develop a way to understand not just where people are today, but where they are headed over the long term. And that will require innovation and new mechanism development. Fifth and finally, our mechanisms need to be organized around entry points that are primed for transformative change. If what we're doing is trying to steer a set of linked, complex, dynamic systems, then there are literally an infinite number of ways to organize mechanisms of accountability around that. We need to be smart about where we choose to dig in. We need to dig in areas where we think that there will be the possibility of mobilizing coalitions, new ways of acting, new ways of thinking, in ways that can take off. Some of the candidates that have been under discussion include managing the food, water, energy nexus, focusing on the green economy, and focusing on measuring and managing ecosystem services. There's many different ways to do it, but we have to tackle it directly and explicitly. We should not simply repeat the accountability mechanisms we have inherited, but we should focus on those which we want to leave behind as our legacy. So in conclusion, the world has changed dramatically in the last couple of generations. We now recognize that the underpinnings of various Earth systems support processes of human well-being. And we recognize the complex web of connections that both threaten our future and provide leverage points for achieving the future we want. Therefore, the accountability mechanisms we establish need to reflect an equally bold departure from the status quo. The embarrassment of combating 21st century problems with 20th century solutions can no longer be excused. The accountability mechanisms we need are systems-focused, integrated, action and learning-oriented, participatory, and sensitive to place-specific dynamics. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Provide for us bound, as we say, but the challenges of ensuring that the capacities to use them effectively. And the importance of sound institutions, as I kept hearing you talk about the systems that we need to embrace in a transformational and a transitional agenda. So I hope that that will be a lot of food for thought for the reality of where we are now and where we need to be over time. Thank you. Last but not least, our representative from Civicus Alliance, the New York representative. I now give the floor to Mr. Jeff Huffines.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Joanna Kerr, who is Executive Director of Greenpeace Canada and a board member of Civicus. She was hoping to join us, but her flight was canceled because of fog early this morning. The original MDGs provided a pathway to ensure greater accountability by governments on internationally agreed development goals. Yet when citizens around the world wanted to know the performance on an indicator in a particular country, the only information at their disposal was official data, academic research, or expert analysis, frequently published months, if not years, after the survey was conducted. So as we head towards a new set of Global Goals on Sustainable Development. Civicus is seeking to create a new way for citizen reporting of progress. The potential for meaningful interaction between citizens and governments through technological advances in citizen reporting, engagement, and monitoring is one of the most important paradigm shifts of the early 21st century. It is also easier than ever before to aggregate multi-source data so that something produced for local use can have global relevance. These twin trends of facilitated citizen voice and international data curation hold a significant promise for improving development, accountability, and performance. After a year of scoping and consultation, Civicus launched the Big Development Data Shift at the Mexico City high-level meeting of the Global Partnership for Effective Development Cooperation last month. The data shift is an ambitious attempt to build the capacity of civil society around the world to collect, curate, and use citizen-generated data in development. By investing in measures to increase the comparability of citizen-generated data, we hope to generate powerful new tools to monitor progress, especially on the new post-2015 Sustainable Development Goals. This initiative will put people-powered accountability at the heart of the data revolution in development. New technologies present new opportunities for bringing citizen voice to the fore, to democratize the way that information, news, and views about development are collected, curated, and used. From citizen reporting on key development outcomes to crowdsourcing opinion on how people are perceiving progress, new initiatives that promote people-powered accountability are popping up around the world. Yet, at present, these initiatives are still few and far between, especially in the global south. They also tend to be driven, rightly, by global need, and so cannot easily be compared globally. And few CSOs have the skills and resources to generate a systematic evidence base. Moreover, recent attempts to leverage technology for people-powered accountability are often driven by ad hoc responses to highly contextual and wildly dissimilar factors. These initiatives produce a largely incompatible mix of databases, which poses significant challenges to comparing citizen-generated data from different sources. Further, problems of scale and coverage complicate the harmonizing of data to generate rigorous and comparable metrics for monitoring international development goals. But despite these challenges, a majority of stakeholders consulted by Civicus were convinced of the necessity and excited about the opportunities for a data shift project. The consultations revealed a broad consensus among national campaigners, international CSOs, donors, and researchers regarding the need to empower creative and effective social accountability in the Sustainable Development Framework. In order for this to happen, the Big Development Data Shift will focus on three priority areas. First, on coverage. There is an urgent need to build the capacity of civil society in the Global South to generate, analyze, and use citizen-generated data in a systematic way. We will work with a broad multi-stakeholder platform to share skills, strategies, and technologies across issues and countries. Second priority area, comparability. Much work is needed to promote the comparability of citizen-generated data across thematic and geographical contexts. Official data from GDP figures to aid information can only be compared because of a painstaking process of standards building. We need to do the same to promote comparability of citizen-generated data in development. Third priority is campaigning. If challenges of comparability and coverage are addressed, we believe that powerful new tools for monitoring progress in development can be created. This approach of focusing on citizens and meeting needs from the bottom up will provide the missing link between the data revolution and the call for greater accountability and transparency. Through the eventual development of collaborative standards and innovative resources, Civicus hopes to empower a global landscape of interconnected data sets and organizations to provide strong, evidence-based tools for promoting people-powered accountability. The DataShift project is conscious that there is no need for another simplistic, overambitious initiative that fetishizes data and technology as silver bullets. And we certainly do not want to create a digital white elephant. Instead, we will work with civil society, especially in the Global South, to build familiarity and confidence so that a new set of actors harness the potential of new technologies. If we can then join the dots, build some basic standards that allow for aggregation and harmonization, we can start generating new data and technology as technology evolves and overcome access issues. We stand to create a new set of accountability tools. We seek to launch the DataShift dashboard in 2016 as a web-based presentation of people-powered accountability initiatives and a new global information system for monitoring and shaping sustainable development goals. The goal is to create a significant new reference point which will complement official data and expert analysis. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hafeins, and I really appreciate your stepping in at the last moment. Excellencies, it's now time for me to open the floor for comments and questions. And in this regard, I would plead with our distinguished representatives to limit the interventions to 3 minutes so that we can have all requests from the floor responded to. Currently, we have just over 20 member states here, and the list is growing, and I'm sure that we would much like to hear the response from member states who are taking the leadership and owning the process as we go forward. So it's now my pleasure to give the floor to the distinguished representative of Pakistan, to be followed by the representative of the United Republic of Tanzania.
Honorable Special Advisor for the Secretary General, Ms. Amina Mohammed, thank you so much for moderating this panel discussion and for making strenuous efforts to steer the post-2015 development agenda. We also thank the panelists for their very informative presentations. I am pleased to see Mr. Anders Johnson on the podium, who brings to us the perspective of world parliaments. My 3 minutes start now. Work on global monitoring and accountability of development commitments cannot wait until all the goals and targets have been agreed. It needs to be an integral part of the ongoing debate on the design of the post-2015 development agenda and its implementation. First, an agenda that is universally applicable requires a much broader accountability framework than the one used for MDGs. It is much more than monitoring, review, and evaluation. It's about results that ensure a life of dignity for all on a healthy planet. And as Ms. Amina Mohammed said, it should give voice to the voiceless. Appropriate incentives for governments and other stakeholders should be built into the design to ensure that all commitments regarding SDGs and financing for development are fulfilled. The incentives should be built on reciprocal commitment towards a transformative path. The higher the level of transformation towards sustainable development, the higher would be the level of international support. This is not a conditionality, but a necessary alignment. Second, accountability should be people-centered. This is best done at the national level. Parliaments, audit institutions, and civil society actors are good vehicles for enhancing this objective. Self-assessment should be the guiding principle. Nations should be in the driving seat. Third, we should encourage accountability at the regional level. That is where mutual learning and peer reviews can be promoted. Countries share similar challenges, and they are likely to make greater progress by collectively addressing their problems. Resources must also be devoted to harmonization of regional reviews. Fourth, national and regional accountability frameworks have to be anchored in a global accountability framework that is simple and focused and provides clarity on the roles of the different actors. The new mechanisms or architecture should be built upon existing accountability mechanisms. We do not have to start from scratch. A new accountability and review mechanism must be conceived as a two-way street. New partnership models could look into ways to review both national efforts and contribution of those assisting with funding, capacity, and technology. Other stakeholders, particularly the multilateral development banks and international financial institutions, will have a seat on the table as per established practice. The annual scope of the review should be focused on a particular thematic area or goal consistent with the SDGs and determined by the level of development. There should be a greater focus on reliability of the national data, and adequate investment should be made in developing the capacities of statistical machineries to collate, compile, synthesize, and generate timely, reliable, and accessible data. Madam Moderator, the annual ministerial reviews conducted by ECOSOC did help in mobilizing countries to talk about their achievements and challenges. However, we have learned that an entirely New York-centric accountability is unlikely to engage national and regional actors. The new architecture should be decentralized. The ECOSOC system, especially through the regional commissions, should be mobilized to establish various platforms for accountability. And my final point is that the high-level political forum should be leveraged to create space for bringing the results of national and regional reviews to the global level. I thank you.
I thank the representative from Pakistan and give the floor to the representative of the United Republic of Tanzania.
I thank you, Madam Chair, for convening this important interactive dialogue. The presentations this morning have, in our view, been truly insightful. We wish to underscore the following, that monitoring and accountability of any development endeavor is a national preoccupation requiring full ownership and leadership of concerned states. Member states must be encouraged and not compelled to undertake such monitoring and ensure accountability in fulfilling their development process in line with the post-2015 development agenda. Indeed, we see enormous value in addressing the issue of monitoring and evaluation in the context of means of implementation. In this regard, Member States lacking capacity and capable institutions for undertaking monitoring and ensuring accountability would require assistance from both bilateral, regional, and international partners. Indeed, we are reminded of an earlier World Bank development report of 2004, Making Services Work for Poor People, that noted that key services often fail poor in access, quality, and quantity, imperiling the achievement of MDGs because of a lack of involvement of stakeholders. The main difference between success and failures in such efforts by countries is because in countries to make services work for the people is the degree to which people themselves are involved in determining the quality and quantity of services which they receive. Capacity building for stakeholders as well as policy and decision makers is essential to achieve the level of community empowerment and social inclusion required to make gains in service effectiveness, human development, and poverty eradication. It is in this regard that we see enormous potential of strengthening regional mechanisms for monitoring and accountability instead of reinventing the wheel. Africa is proud of its African peer review mechanism, a voluntary mechanism for encouraging adherence by its members of political, economic, and corporate governance values, codes, and standards in pursuit of social economic development endeavors. At the international level, we have the newly established high-level political forum, whose mandate includes following up and reviewing progress in the implementation of development commitments. We believe that our discussions in this area should seek to better define the role of the high-level political forum in monitoring and ensuring accountability in the implementation of the new development agenda. In conclusion, we wish to underscore the importance of having a framework which monitors progress and fulfillment of development commitments at national, regional, and international levels. Such a framework should be guided by the principles of national ownership and leadership, voluntary subscription, common but differentiated responsibility, because no one size fits all, and inclusivity. We wish to note that this is a mere beginning of a long discussion on this matter. I thank you.
I thank the representative from the Republic of Tanzania, and I give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom, followed by the representative of the United States of America.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you also to all of the panelists for their excellent presentations, and I think all in different ways have made very strongly the case that getting the accountability and monitoring side of the post-2015 development agenda right will be absolutely vital to achieve an agenda that's truly transformative. And that because we're talking about an agenda that will be bigger than more complex than our existing international development agenda, and we'll need to bring in new actors much more inclusively, it's clear that we're talking about a step change in monitoring and accountability. Could I perhaps respond to the panelists by that there seemed to me some really key things that came out of their various presentations. The first is obviously this issue around data and information. Again, no accountability mechanism will work if it doesn't have data and understandable information to inform it. So quite clearly, as part of this post-2015 development agenda, we're going to need better, clearer, more up-to-date, more intelligent data, and we're going to need that turned into accessible, usable information, and information that's accessible and usable not just or even primarily, certainly not primarily by us sitting here in New York, but by ordinary people and citizens around the world. And that information will have to tell us about progress, not just in the averages, but also what's happening to different groups of people, to ensure that different groups, whether it be women, whether it be marginalised groups, whether it be groups at different level of income, are not left behind in this new agenda. So that's a huge challenge, but a surmountable one, because I think when you look around the world at the moment, huge amounts of data are being captured in different ways. So it's not that it's impossible to do, but there's a big challenge, I think, in how we draw that information together and how the UN system, national governments, work with the other sources of data that are already out there, primarily in the private sector, that are taking huge advantage of the technical transformation we've seen in the last couple of decades. So I would actually like to ask the panelists for any further reflections on how we can take that work on data forward, whether it's here in New York or around the world. A second point that seemed to me to come out really clearly is that, in the end, the key question for accountability is not the mechanisms you have, not the institutions, but what you are being held accountable for. So therefore, when we look at this question, it's less to do with inventing and establishing new institutions. It's much more to looking at what accountability frameworks are out there, many of which, of course, are very powerful, most notably the relationship between a government and its citizens, and trying to ensure that those relationships, those accountability mechanisms that already exist, are integrating these new goals and targets that we're working on. And I should say, I think that also implies to things like involvement of the private sector and civil society organisations and so on. They have their own accountability mechanisms. So rather than think that they can all be held to account through a sort of top-heavy process in New York, I think one of the challenges we need to set ourselves is how we encourage those organizations to integrate into their own activities goals, targets, and indicators that are relevant to this new agenda. At the global level, we clearly need a robust mechanism for a discussion among states, but that needs to be efficient, flexible. It needs to be transparent and inclusive and take account of the fact that states are not the only actors in here. So we need to think hard about how we define that and not concentrate on that solely, because in the end, that what we do at the global level should empower and support what happens at national, regional, and other levels, rather than our seeing what happens at those levels being there to support what happens at a global level. So encouraging, supporting what happens at a national level is absolutely key. A third point that I thought came out really clearly is the importance of governance in all of this. The Vietnamese permanent representative, Mr. Saez, Mr. Johnson, and others made this point really importantly, really powerfully, that governance is of central importance to this agenda and will have stronger and more effective accountability and implementation if the Sustainable Development Goals and Targets promote and support accountable and effective governance at national level. A fourth point that I thought came out clearly, including from what's, you know, just having the speakers here, is how much there is to learn about this subject and how much our discussion in New York here needs to be informed by experience around the world, the voices of ordinary people, the voices of the actors who need to be involved in this agenda. So I think one thing that will be very important that happens on the back of discussions here is that there are sort of real consultations happening around the world about this accountability issue, and that those consultations are happening in good time to inform the implementation of the new agenda. I think one of the hugely encouraging things about our discussions here is so far how greatly they've been informed by the different global, regional, national consultations. So in this area as well, I think that we need to take full advantage of that opportunity and I think look, amongst others, to you, Madam Chair, to perhaps work out how we can take forward some of those consultations or how you can take forward some of them so that our discussions here can be well informed on what people around the world are thinking about accountability. Thank you very much.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom, and I now give the floor to the representative of the United States of America, followed by the plurinational state of Bolivia on behalf of the Group of 77 and China.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We join others in thanking the PGA for this timely and engaging discussion. The new development agenda we are in the process of crafting will be a departure for all of us. We are striving for a new level of ambition in the nature and quality of our goals, a holistic orientation that integrates all three pillars of sustainable development, and a universality that will make our framework relevant in some fashion to everyone, every country, every community, every stakeholder, every citizen. We have the potential to forge a framework that is truly path-breaking. In embarking on something so new, we also need to bring a fresh and open approach to the crucial issues of monitoring and accountability. How we track and evaluate progress, how we learn from our evolving experience, and how we approach accountability will be essential to our overall success. So we very much welcome this session, as well as a deeper dialogue generally on this vital issue. It is very clear to us that we need both to learn from our extensive experience with a wide variety of existing monitoring frameworks, including the MDGs, as well as to craft something innovative going forward. We will highlight just a few considerations we believe are important. First, data, its sufficiency, quality, and transparency. Any monitoring framework is only as good as the quality of the data on which it relies, as we have heard many times this morning. We will not fill data gaps overnight, but it will be imperative that we elaborate strategies to fill them over time, and in ways that give all stakeholders, government, citizens, scientists and experts, private sector, civil society, better tools for decision-making, action, and cumulative learning. As we have heard this morning, we have astounding new technologies to help capture better data and the potential to create strong platforms for building a deeper data and knowledge base about actions in the areas that will be the focus of our agenda. We will need to explore strengthening country capacity for data collection and analysis and capitalize on technological innovation to make data collection more efficient, widely accessible, and usable. We need to build in the potential to better disaggregate data to ensure that particularly the needs of the most vulnerable are met. And we need to consider real-time and non-traditional sources and uses of data. We need to cultivate a data ecosystem with a wide variety of stakeholders and better link data generation, analysis, use, and feedback. There has been much useful work done already on these issues in many fora, including the Development Cooperation Forum, on which we can build. Second, multiple stakeholders. Not only is the development landscape changing in all the ways frequently noted, but the multiplicity of actors who have a stake and responsibility in advancing any new goals needs to be reflected. Whatever mechanisms or frameworks we elaborate to support monitoring and accountability fundamentally need to reflect this diverse development environment. We believe this is likely to require a combination of frameworks and mechanisms, not just a singular framework, in order to be relevant, dynamic, knowledge-driven, and responsive. Third, and a very basic point, we need to recognize that we are not just talking about traditional development cooperation. This is absolutely still a vital and essential component of our agenda. But we are now discussing a universal agenda that goes beyond development cooperation in a traditional sense and which has far-reaching implications for ownership and accountability. We see scope for greater rigor and transparency around monitoring traditional instruments of development cooperation and official development assistance, which we note in 2013 reached its highest level ever of $134.8 billion. The monitoring and accountability tools we need for the post-2015 development agenda, however, will need to reflect a more complex field of action and actors. Fourth, we see considerable potential in building explicitly on some of the existing monitoring and review mechanisms already in place, as many other speakers have mentioned. The last thing we need is extra layers and greater burdens in reporting. So we believe it is vital to take time to assess the nature of the information we need, where it is already being collected or could most easily be collected, and explore ways to link or align existing mechanisms in a more focused, deliberate, and cumulative way. A networked approach to monitoring, if data is collected in a compatible and comparable way, is highly likely to be more robust, relevant, and sustained in a way to truly enhance accountability. At every stage, we should also look for opportunities to enhance capacity that can be sustained. With regard to the high-level political forum, the Development Cooperation Forum, and other mechanisms, we are open to various ideas. Our primary concern is that we not add layers, that we devise simple and motivating mechanisms for accountability, and that we use platforms like the HLPF for functions that they uniquely can fulfill. We do not see much likely value in a heavy central mechanism that tries to be everything to everyone. That does not have much prospect for success in our view. We think the high-level political forum's highest and best function is as a platform for strategic debate and agenda setting that should be informed by what we are monitoring and learning as we go. Our ultimate success will be if we can craft a genuinely fresh set of instruments that gives all of our citizens and all stakeholders stronger tools to advance the goals we hope soon to set. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
I'd like to thank the representative of the United States of America and give the floor to the plurinational state of Bolivia on behalf of the Group of 77 and China, followed by the representative of the European Union.
Thank you. Thank you. I have the honor to deliver this statement on behalf of the Group of 77 and China. The group would like to thank the President of the General Assembly for his leadership and engagement in the post-2015 development agenda. The Group of 77 and China attach great importance to the post-2015 development agenda in accordance with the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and poverty eradication as the overarching objective. The group considers the issue of an inappropriate monitoring and accountability framework an important one. However, the debate organized today appears premature as the negotiations on the agenda itself had not yet begun. An agreement on the agenda, including its objectives and the means on implementation, must precede any definitive understanding on the nature of the monitoring and accountability framework. A suitable intergovernmental monitoring and accountability framework for the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda must fully take into account the developmental needs and priorities of the developing countries. The objective to this framework must be to create an enabling environment to aid and assist the efforts of developing countries in achieving their sustainable development objectives in line with their national circumstances and priorities. capacity building and sharing best practice and technologies should be an important part of the monitor and accountability framework. The group also believes that General Assembly Resolution 68/1 on the reform of the ECOSOC and 68/270 on the format and organizational aspect of the high-level political forum provide an agreement basis for the review of substantial development commitments as part of the post-2015 development agenda. Any monitoring and accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda must preserve its intergovernmental and voluntary nature. We should approach the issue of a monitoring accountability framework for the prism of insensitive and not compliance. At the same time, as it is important for an intergovernmental mechanism to carry out periodic reviews on the commitments related to means of implementation, including official development assistance, transfer of technology, capacity building as part of post-2015 development agenda. This should be a central feature of the monitoring and accountability framework. We would like to highlight that despite the short notice of this interactive dialogue, the Group of 77 and China maintains its principal points. We believe that developing countries should be taken into consideration as we represent the largest group in the United Nations and we can certainly contribute positively in the process when appropriate. I thank you.
I thank the representative of the plurinational state of Bolivia on behalf of the Group of G77 and China. I invite the representative of the European Union to take the floor, followed by the representative of Benin on behalf of the Group of LDCs.
Thank you, Madam Assistant Secretary General, and warm thanks to the panelists, the discussants, and the analysts for their very thought-provoking presentations. We very much welcome this opportunity to discuss the monitoring and accountability framework for the post-2015 development agenda. For this agenda to be effective, truly transformational and people-centered, we need a strong monitoring and accountability framework. This new framework should incorporate the lessons learned and best practices from existing monitoring and accountability mechanisms, both from the MDGs and beyond. While the elements of the post-2015 development agenda are still being discussed, we believe that the following elements are important. One, transparency. This is important in itself and the first step towards accountability. Two, mutual accountability at national and international levels, which includes monitoring progress on post-2015 goals and targets, the contribution of sound policies and effective financing by national governments, the contribution of international action and private sector to national efforts in pursuit of global goals and the actual improvement of people's lives. Three, enhanced data availability and quality. This will support evidence-based political decision-making so that we can effectively monitor and ensure that no one is left behind. In this regard, we support the work of the Friends of the Chair Group, mandated by the Statistical Commission, to provide technical support to the Open Working Group on SDGs. We will need to scale up efforts to produce, analyze, and disseminate data to better document inequalities, distributional outcomes, and marginalization. It will be important to collect sex-desegregated data to track progress for women and men and ensure that gender equality is effectively mainstreamed throughout SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda. High-level political involvement, as well as periodic and inclusive global and national reviews of progress on specific goals, targets, and indicators, are essential. Such reviews should notably increase the ability of people to participate in policy choices that affect them and to hold governments and other actors accountable. This should also ensure that national governments and, as appropriate, other actors, including the private sector, are accountable to the global community. Civil society, local authorities, and the private sector should play a key role in advancing transparency and accountability. From the perspective of the European Union and its member states, we are constantly working to improve the regular and public review of our policies and actions. Just to give you some recent examples, one of them is the EU Aid Explorer tool that provides access to data on EU development and humanitarian aid around the world. It was launched at the high-level meeting of the Global Partnership for Effective Development Cooperation in Mexico. Another one is the regular report on policy coherence for development, which has become a significant pillar of the EU effort to leverage the impact of external assistance and to better tailor and assess the external effects of EU non-development policies in partner countries. I thank you, Madam Assistant Secretary General.
I thank the representative of the European Union, and I now give the floor to the representative of Benin on behalf of the group of LDCs, followed by the representative of Cuba.
Madam
Assistant Secretary General, I'd like to thank you
to deliver this statement on behalf of LDCs. The LDCs associate themselves with a statement made by Bolivia on behalf of a group of 77 plus China. The group would like to commend the President of the General Assembly for organizing today's dialogue. It's highly relevant for the group as regards its timing and the questions we are seized with. The lack of strong follow-up, monitoring, and accountability framework rendered the MDGs an unfinished agenda for many countries. Therefore, the group calls for a post-2015 development agenda strongly underpinned by a transformative shift toward a renewed spirit of solidarity, cooperation, common understanding, and mutual accountability. The group adheres to the recommendations of the Secretary General's high-level panel in the sense that any new goals should be accompanied by an independent and rigorous monitoring system with regular opportunities to discuss results at a high political level. Tracking progress toward the post-2015 development agenda will be data intensive. Thus, there will be a strong need for reliable, reconcilable time real statistics. In LDCs, a number of factors constrain the availability of quality data and statistics. Therefore, the group of LDCs will need strong support to build their national statistical capacity. As various studies suggest, development cooperation can be meaningfully fostered by robust global accountability frameworks. To secure better results on the ground, we need an accountable and transparent delivery of development cooperation. Thus, the group takes a high stake in ensuring a dynamic and vigorous monitoring and accountability framework. To this purpose, the group would like to make the following specific recommendations. First, the UN should build its own statistical database in a comprehensive and user-friendly manner. The data collected should serve as a basis to establish a matrix capturing the whole set of post-2015 development indicators and other internationally agreed goals and targets to monitor progress toward their achievements. Second, the United Nations system should assign high priority to strengthening national statistic capacities of LDCs to develop their national databases that contain national and international data on post-2015 development agenda with related metadata to be made available for all interested users. This will help us get real-time primary data from the country level and ensure compliance with international standards, uniform methodologies in data collection, processing and dissemination to facilitate reconcilability. In this respect, the national capacity building efforts should begin now so that a mechanism could be put in place in 2015 without any lag time. Third, for effective monitoring of progress in the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda, the UN system organizations, World Bank, Bretton Woods institutions, and other international and regional organizations should use the uniform category of countries, which is recognized by the United Nations. Currently, different entities, even within the UN system, are using different category of countries in their reports, often arbitrarily, which creates a complexity in the follow-up and monitoring process. This must end in the post-2015 development process, the classification of countries agreed in the framework of the United Nations should be adopted by all as consensual basis for concerted and coordinated action. Fourth, in line with the MDG GAP Task Force report, there should be an elaborated annual report prepared by the United Nations system on the status of implementation of the whole range of issues covered under the Global Partnership for Development and the means of implementation. Fifth, while the above mentioned report is examined at the appropriate level, best practices should be recorded, constraints should be identified, and on this basis, concrete recommendations should be made in a negotiated document on the way forward. It may be considered whether this function could be carried out within the framework of a high-level political panel. Sixth, drawing on the experience from the Universal Periodic Review, African Peer Review Mechanism, and the voluntary presentation at the annual ministerial review of ECOSOC, there should be a strong peer review mechanism in place at both global and regional levels, where the fulfillment of commitments by both developed and developing countries will be extensively reviewed. More voice and participation of LDCs in the peer review process should be vitally important. Seventh, the high-level political forum annual meetings under the auspices of ECOSOC, starting from 2016, in replacement of an annual ministerial review according to Resolution 67/290, and the meetings of a development cooperation forum should be conducted in a way to ensure holistic consideration of issues in order to review the progress made in the implementation of post-2015 development agenda, in particular in the field of international development cooperation. Finally, the robust and rigorous monitoring and evaluation system and accountability framework should constitute an integral part of a post-2015 development agenda. Et avant de terminer, je voudrais souligner...
And in ending, I would like to underline the essential importance of efficient governance at the national level as well as governance at the national level, because we must continue to have these mechanisms work together for the best results. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Benin on behalf of the group of LDCs. I would like to take this opportunity to please plead with member states that we try to remain within the 3 minutes to enable all member states to take the floor in the remaining 20 minutes that we have, and with the possibility of having a response from the panelists. I would now like to give the floor to the representative of Cuba, followed by the representative of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Muchas gracias. Thank you very much, moderator. My delegation would like to associate itself with the statement delivered by the distinguished representative from the plurinational state of Bolivia, representing the G77 and China. And at the same time, we would like to thank Mr. John Ash, President of the General Assembly, for convening this interactive dialogue. And we'd also like to thank the distinguished panelists for their interesting contributions. Madam Moderator, my delegation feels that it's still too early to begin to speak about an accountability and monitoring framework for the post-2015 development agenda. This discussion is something that we should have during the 69th session of the General Assembly in the open-ended working group that will be negotiating this agenda. This is what was agreed in GA Resolution 68.6. The definition of the agenda and the mechanisms to follow up on its implementation should be negotiated in parallel. Moderator, that notwithstanding, my delegation feels that the following aspects do constitute fundamental components for following up on the implementation of the new agenda for development. One, any mechanism or framework that we might adopt needs to be intergovernmental in nature, and it needs to respect the principles established in the Charter of the United Nations, and it must be on a voluntary basis too. The follow-up mechanism should also respect the principles included in the Rio Declaration of 1992 on the environment, the Johannesburg Plan of Action, and the aspects included in the outcome document of Rio+20, in particular the principle of shared but differentiated responsibilities. At the same time, any monitoring should only come under the three pillars of sustainable development: economic development, social development, and the protection of the environment. Four, developed countries must take the lead in this accountability, particularly with regard to changing their patterns of production and consumption and in providing support to sustainable development in developing countries. This means that this framework, or this intergovernmental framework, should lead to the developing countries showing accountability for technology transfer and preferential arrangements towards these countries, and also any other initiative that will contribute to sustainable development in developing countries. And finally, this framework cannot be used as a political pressure mechanism against developing countries. We must respect the sovereignty of member states. The data that is used for determining whether the national development goals have been met should be provided by international organizations that have a mandate for this. Thank you.
I'd like to thank the representative from Cuba. I now give the floor to the representative of the Islamic Republic of Iran, followed by the representative of Egypt.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Moderator. Let me also at the outset join the others in thanking the President of the General Assembly and you, Madam ASG, for convening this interactive dialogue, and commend the panelists for their very informative presentations. My delegation aligns itself with the statement made by Bolivia on behalf of a group of 77 and China, and I would like to add the 5 points in my national capacity. Which are basically in two categories, on procedural and substantial notes. Substantially, the importance of accountability and monitoring for implementation of sustainable development goals and commitments at all levels, be it governments or NGOs, is undeniable. As a lesson learned from the implementation of MDGs, my delegation also fully concurs with the points raised by many of the panelists and also in the background paper that pursuing a transformative agenda requires a new global partnership for development, as well as a robust, inclusive, and transparent monitoring and accountability framework. But however, we could say that by reviewing the analytical reports on gaps and barriers in the achievement of the MDGs, we could barely see that those for example, the reduction of death in the road accidents are not done by the governments because they don't want to pursue their commitments. It is mainly over there that goals are unaccomplished, mainly due either lack of resources, necessary technologies, capacity building, and or unfair international trading and financial systems, which are all classified in the Rio Plus 20 outcome document as means of implementations. While on the issue of means of implementation, there are certain attempts on the part of some of the partners to delay engagement to after the agreement of SDGs or even after the agreement on the post-2015 development agenda. It is a matter of somehow concern that the issue of monitoring and accountability of an agenda, which itself is not yet envisaged, is being discussed in advance of the agenda itself. If there were a reference to any of similar monitoring mechanisms by any of our panelists or even in the background paper, namely to AMR, to APRM, to TPRM, UPR, or OECD, EPR, we could see that they were all possible just after when the picture of what, who, and how were made clear. That was partly mentioned by our distinguished panelist, Ms. Melamed. I think this is a very important point. And the approach on the nature of the SDGs and post-2015 development agenda should also be clear. It is interesting to note that during the discussions about the SDGs, when there were a concern about the current draft for being too much prescriptive at the national level, some referred to SDGs as guidelines and not commitments. So the nature of this SDGs and post-2015 development agenda should also be clear. The question is that if a goal is not binding, what kind of accountability should be expected? And who or what would be the subject of this accountability? The fourth point is that, on a procedural note, in accordance with the Rio outcome document, Rio Plus 20 outcome document, and also the Resolution 67/290, the newly established high-level political forum is mandated to conduct regular reviews of implementation of sustainable development commitments and objectives with clear specifications, such as to be voluntary, to include both developed and developing countries, to be state-led, and so forth. This point is clearly captured in some of the interventions and also in the background paper, the earlier part of the background paper. However, in the latter part of the background paper, it seems that as if we are creating a new kind of mechanism or we are working on a new kind of architecture. And my delegation believes that in accordance with the agreements made so far, it is upon the HLPF, either under the auspices of the General Assembly or ECOSOC, to see through different aspects of the monitoring mechanism for the implementation of the development goals in strict compliance with the related internationally agreed commitments. And finally, Madam Moderator, to my delegation, there are a lot of merits in following the discussion under HLPF. I can say some of them, such as strengthening coherence in the UN system, avoiding duplication, consolidating the delivering as one approach that we have a very, very good agreements on this in QCPR and also along with the entity that has been created under the Secretary General, which to our understanding are of the main reasons for the broad agreement at the UN on replacing AMR with a new structure as reflected in Resolution 68/1. So I can sum up my points into three questions, if it is possible to direct it to the panelists. The first one is that because the agenda is not yet known, are we talking about the issue at the right time? The second question is, because the HLPF is, I'm finishing just for two sentences. Because the HLPF is mandated to this, are we discussing this issue at the right place? And the third point is that since it is to be MOI to be monitored and to make them accountable, are we talking about the right subject as well? Thank you very much.
I thank the representative, Islamic Republic of Iran, and I now give the floor to the representative for Egypt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to, at the outset, to thank as well the President of the General Assembly for organizing this interactive dialogue. I would like to commend the panelists for their presentation, which were all very interesting and thought-provoking. And to commend in particular the presentation made by Mr. Robert Bissio from Social Watch, which in my view brought interesting perspective to the discussion. I would like also to associate my comments with those delivered by G77 and China. Madam Chair, the GA Resolution 67290 decided that the HLPF should follow up and review progress in the implementation of all the outcomes of the major United Nations conferences and summits in the economic, social, and environmental fields, as well as their respective means of implementation. The resolution also decided that the HLPF shall conduct regular reviews starting in 2016 on the follow-up and implementation of sustainable development commitments and objectives, including those related to the means of implementation and within the context of post-2015. Those reviews shall be voluntary while encouraging reporting and shall include developed and developing countries as well as relevant United Nations entities. They shall be state-led, involving ministerial and other relevant high-level participants. They shall provide platform for partnerships, including through the participation of major groups and other relevant stakeholders. Thus, in our view, there is already a mandate from the GA that the HLPF undertakes such task. We need to focus the debate and the discussion then on how to empower HLPF to fulfill this mandate. It is important in this regard to give due attention to the monitoring of fulfilling commitments related to means of implementation, especially that previous experiences in this regard were not successful, such as in the cases of the CSD or monitoring the fulfillment of commitments by developed countries to assist developing countries in the framework of UNFCCC. The RioPlus20 document reaffirmed that means of implementation are indispensable for achieving the full and effective translation of sustainable development commitments into tangible sustainable development outcomes. This is the reason why review of fulfilling commitments with regard to means of implementation is an integral part of any potential review of sustainable development commitments, objectives and goals, as well as the post-2015 development agenda. The HLPF should establish a robust and efficient review mechanism to monitor the support provided to developing countries and examine its impact, as well as review the efforts by developed and developing countries to achieve sustainable development, taking into consideration the principle of CBDR. In conclusion, the HLPF review mechanism should be flexible, evolutive, and should be based on learning by doing approach. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'd like to thank the representative from Egypt for his comments. At this point, I'd like to ask for the understanding of member states that in order to give the panelists some time to respond to the member states' interventions, thus that the remaining requests to take the floor be given priority this afternoon. And they are representatives from Japan, Switzerland, Peru, China, Kazakhstan, Brazil, India, Morocco, the Republic of Korea, and Argentina. At this point, I'd like to ask our panelists, working from my right through, I believe we still have our discussants on the floor. We don't have time, and clearly we would have liked to have shared much more of the feedback with them, but as we believe this is the very beginning of these discussions on this subject as within the process. So if you could take 30 seconds. What we have a challenge with, I believe, is our interpreters and a respect for their time and the efforts that they've made to try to keep up with us today. So, Mr. Johansson.
In 30 seconds, let me say that I think that the debate is very timely to respond to the intervention from the delegate from the Islamic Republic of Iran, because I think that when you discuss accountability mechanisms, you will see that depending upon what you are looking at, you may want to reflect on that also within your agenda itself. So it would not be terribly advisable to agree upon the agenda and then start talking about accountability, because you may then have locked yourself into something that is not going to help you to ensure accountability. With respect to, I think it was the intervention from the UK which spoke about making sure that the existing institution and others actually incorporate this in their agenda. Let me say that at least as far as parliaments are concerned, we've been starting for a year ago to make sure that there is a debate in parliaments and that they do prepare themselves, because by hook or by crook, one form or another, they have to be involved. And let me just end by drawing your attention to the fact that we're also working with a group of some 25 speakers of parliament to prepare for a global speakers conference here in New York on the eve of your summit, when you are going to adopt the new agenda. And there they see very much this agenda as something that they want to make sure is on the parliamentary agenda. So there is another mechanism that I think that we can work with to the benefit of the implementation of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Fascinating discussion. I've heard two things very strongly. The first is clearly a very strong level of enthusiasm for and commitment to the idea of improving data. I'm not sure I have an answer to the question for the delegate from the UK, but I think it's clear that two things need to happen quite quickly if this enthusiasm and momentum is to be sustained and lead to improvements. The first is resources. As several people have pointed out, this doesn't come for free, and people will need to invest in it. And the second is a degree of organisation to make sure that there is a facility for learning and for sharing best practice and information across the very broad range of actors involved in this field. The second thing I've heard very strongly is a desire for any future accountability framework, however it looks, to monitor two things in equal measure. First of all, outcomes, how people's lives are changing, and secondly, commitments by countries, the means of implementation, and how countries are fulfilling their obligations to each other. So I think as you deliberate on the exact framework, or the exact nature of the framework, it's those two objectives that need to be held very firmly in the front of your minds from this conversation.
Thank you. Let me also express my confidence that it's very timely dialogue, because we running out of time. The review of MDGs will be next year, and already we in process of discussing the all aspects and outcomes of this and formulating the new goals. And so I think it's a very good idea to combine to have simultaneous exercise of what the future accountability framework would be, because it will influence on the formulation of the goals itself. So on the other hand, the new goals also would be the legacy of MDGs. So though it will be new goals, so most of them ideas we already know that. So I think it's very timely and it's very right place to discuss it here at UN in New York. Thank you.
Thank you. Very briefly, in less than 30 seconds, I think this discussion of data is extremely interesting. I think the challenge, I think as someone said, there is no magic bullets with data, and it does not come on the cheap. And when we think about data, it's not a scarcity of information or a scarcity of data. It's translating that into national statistics. And we know that national statistical offices have different strengths. And so I think this should be a focus point of capacity building. I think the second area is just to underscore what Mark Levy said, is that we need to think about this data challenge in the face of unprecedented change, transition, and complexity. So providing that focus and bringing in a scientific focus on it, I think, is also important. So thank you.
I just wanted to end by saying that this post-2015 process has been unprecedented in the extent to which civil society across the globe has engaged. It's raised expectations that this agenda will result in a truly transformative agenda, which requires not just being ambitious in content, but also powerful in its means for incentivizing achievement. So my point is that we can't have business as usual with regard to the accountability infrastructure. We must address the asymmetries and imbalances of power, which I think have been the fundamental obstacle to the achievement of the MDGs. The asymmetries of power between developing and wealthier states, between the governing and the governed, between even various non-state actors, comparing multinational corporations to civil society organizations is simply papering over the different extent to which these have the power to help or hinder the development process. So my plea is that we have an ambitious accountability infrastructure that really addresses these asymmetries of power. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Excellencies, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, really the interactions that we have had today have given us an opportunity to harvest a vast wealth of experience, expertise, certainly the lessons learned, and the current thinking that is evolving from what is a complex and transformative agenda that we're expecting of our countries. I'd like to take just very briefly a minute to make a couple of clarifications about the dialogue. And what it's meant to do. It's certainly not meant to prejudge the work of the Open Working Group, nor to come up with concrete proposals on accountability. It is meant to launch an open and inclusive debate on how to ensure that all commitments regarding post-2015 development agenda are honoured. And we've learned certainly from the MDGs that accountability should not be an afterthought. The concept and mechanism should be within tandem with the agenda. And this is clearly acknowledged in the outcome of RioPlus20, which established the HLPF, and acknowledged the role and the key role at that of ECOSOC in ensuring the implementation. So such a dialogue that we are having today is needed to guide the Secretariat, which has to prepare the synthesis report. And what we're really looking for are the ideas on accountability that should be guided by member states and stakeholders. And I'd like to reiterate that the PGA has said that this is just the first dialogue in a series of interactions that will be organised at all levels to clearly understand what are, most importantly, the expectations of member states. If we are to move forward with what we want as a responsive and a robust accountability framework that did better than the MDGs, then it is important that as member states lead and own this process, we understand better their guide and steer. We believe that this should be done as we have started with these processes in an open and transparent manner, and do underscore that it is well coordinated with the work of the Open Working Group and the Committee of Experts of the Financing for Sustainable Development. This just leaves me with finally thanking our panelists, each and every one of them, and our discussants, and particularly member states and stakeholders. I really appreciate the depth and the commitment to the discussions that we've had today from each and every one of you, and look forward and the second panel, reminding participants that the panel discussion 2, entitled Learning from Existing Review Mechanisms, that begins promptly at 3:00 in this chamber, would also be started off with the member states that hadn't had the opportunity to conclude. I thank you. This meeting is adjourned. Yep.